the main admin block of buildings. They showed him into a room that held a table and a couple of chairs, as well as a wide bunk bed covered in a handmade Amish quilt, and a long couch against one wall, upholstered in dark blue leather. The window looked across the parade ground, but the drapes were pulled most of the way across it. Jack could make out some sort of gathering beyond the flagpole, but he couldn't see or hear what was going on.
Food's on the way, boy. Eat well and keep your strength up. Ready for when the general comes calling on you.
Don't he look real purty in them breeches? All snug around that firm young ass. Well, I swear I could take a fly swatter.
Shut that mouth, Yarn. The general hear you coming in what's his, and we'll both be in for it, you double-stoop bastard.
They left Jack alone, shutting the door behind them. But he didn't catch the clicking of any kind of a sec lock. The food was brought in on an elegant, polished beechwood tray, served on real china plates with gleaming cutlery and a genuine glass. The sec man put the tray down on the table, winked at Jack, and flounced out again. The albino boy noticed that his britches also looked uncomfortably on the tight side. Jack hadn't eaten that kind of food for a long time. Once, back in Louisiana, they'd found a store out in the suburbs with its own Nuke solar generator still running, and it had been filled with sealed packs of amazing food. Jack's gang had broken into them and mixed them in large copper pans over bottled gas cookers, not knowing what a lot of them were. This meal was excellent. There was a tureen of vegetable soup, with peas, small chunks of reconstituted potato and turnip, and some fragments of meat that Jack deduced were ham. He noticed that all of the crockery and the knives, forks, and spoons carried the neat crest of crossed sabers and the letters U.S., with the number 7 on them. Another covered dish contained several slices of chicken or turkey with cranberry jelly, as well as creamed dried potatoes and some irradiated vegetables in side bowls. Jack helped himself, his mouth filling with saliva at the scent and taste of the food. For a moment, his mind wandered back to the rancheria at Drowned Squaw Canyon, to his friends who were waiting for him, and to Steps Lightly Moon. He laid down his fork for a dozen heartbeats. The whole balance of his life had shifted forever in the past day or so. Now he'd finally made love to a girl. There would never again be a first time for him. The Mescalero chief's daughter said that she loved him, whatever that might mean. And maybe he also loved her, whatever that might mean. The last part of the meal was a kind of pastry with some cream stuff on top and some red fruit that Jack guessed were strawberries. They didn't taste like much to him. Before leaving, the sec man had poured a glass of dark crimson liquid that was thick and sticky. Jack sipped at it, feeling a fiery warmth spreading through his body. It had been good food and much needed. But now he had to lock onto the problem of how he might make contact with Ryan and find some way of getting them both out. The shouting from outside the window grabbed Jack's full attention. Jack rose from the table, wiping his mouth with a damask dinner napkin. He tugged the drape back, the material dry and frail between his fingers. The crowd of sec men out on the parade ground had grown, and they were now ringing around something, something that was clearly exciting them. But Jack had no way of even guessing what it might be. Behind him, he heard the door open, and he began to turn, conscious yet again of how uncomfortably snug was the fit of the dark blue trooper's breeches. There are two schools of thought about hand-to-hand fighting, particularly when you're up against someone who tops you by inches and outweighs you by more than 100 pounds. One, get inside. Close in, stay tight, and use speed and skill. Or two, keep away. Stay out of reach and move in and out quickly. Ryan had never actually subscribed to either theory. He went along with what the trader used to say about close combat.
Do what's right, and do it hard, and do it fast. That's all.
McLaughlin patted Ryan on the shoulder. Ryan had chosen to strip like the sec man, keeping on his combat boots and his pants. It was a hot day, and it would help to be sweating and slippery.
All right, quiet down. Grudge fight between Rourke here and Ryan Cawdor. No rules. No stoppages. Man down and can't get up. Losers.
Man down, can't get up is fucking dead.
Start on my word.
Stop when I tell you. And I mean that about stopping Rourke, me bucko. General's orders.
Sure thing, Sergeant.
Then, get ready. Fight!
Jack turned, seeing that Court Strasser was in the room, looking just as Christy and Doc had described him. That is, except for the long yellow wig framing a face of petrified cruelty. The boy was immediately struck by the thin skull, narrow eyes, and hooked nose. His lips were like twin furrows hacked across the stretched skin. His full mustache spilled down both sides of his jaw, partly hiding the scars of what looked like a severe beating. He was wearing a long duster coat and beige linen, belted at the waist. The polished toes of riding boots protruded from under the hem.
So, you want to come and join us here at Fort Security, do you, young man?
Yeah, I do.
You will call me General like everyone else here. Do you understand, Jack?
Yeah, General. Understand.
Strasser sat down on the couch, smiling pleasantly at Jack.
Well, you look very well after your ordeal. I believe you have injured your ribs.
Yeah, General.
Does that make it difficult for you to move? Let me be more specific, Trooper Lauren. Does it stop you from bending over?
As mauls go, the one between Ryan and Trooper Rourke wasn't much to talk about. It only lasted a minute or so, and the end was so abrupt that half the Sekhmen watching didn't even realize that it was over. The ring was small enough for Rourke to think he could swamp the one-eyed man with his own bulk, corner him, and wrestle him to the dirt. It had worked several times before. It should have worked again. It didn't. As the fat man shuffled toward him, arms spread, Ryan stood his ground for a moment, watching him. Then he began to back away, but he seemed to catch the heel of his boots in the raked earth, and he stumbled over. Rourke rushed in, diving to land on top of the sprawled figure. But Ryan wasn't there anymore. He wriggled to his left, feeling the ground shake as the Sekhmen landed at his side. Before Rourke could move, Ryan was up on his feet, kicking the trooper with a cold, savage accuracy. The point of his toe cracked open the delicate elbow joint into shards of bone and rags of torn cartilage. Rourke crabbed his way to the farther corner of the ring, helping hands reaching through to tug him to his feet. His left arm dangled uselessly at his side, and the slobbering grin of anticipation had vanished. A look of sweating terror had replaced it.
Come on, fat boy!
Rourke was surrounded by Sekhmen. Magically, a knife appeared in his right hand, passed from behind. A short-bladed hideaway knife with a handmade taped hilt.
Hey! God damn it, Rourke!
It don't matter, McLaughlin. I told you to come on, fat boy. Come on!
Fucking Indian-loving bastard!
Rourke came at Ryan again, the tip of the knife making jerking darts toward his opponent. Ryan waited, perfectly balanced on the balls of his feet, relaxed and ready. He feinted toward the knife with his left hand, swiveling like a dancer, and kicked at the Sekhman's knees. Rourke dodged him, realizing too late that the kick had also been a feint. Ryan swung all the way around in a complete circle. Ryan's boot crunched hard enough into the Sekhman's groin to fold him over as if his appendix had ruptured. The knife fell from the trooper's fingers. Without a split second's hesitation, Ryan crouched and brought up the heel of his right hand against the injured man's nose with devastating force. He felt the impact clear to his shoulder, hearing the familiar splintering of bone. Rourke went down like a steer under the poleaxe. His eyes were wide open, but only the bloodshot whites were showing to the bright sky. His legs kicked and twitched, fingers scraping at the sand of the parade ground, the nails breaking in the earth. A thin worm of crimson crept from between the thick lips.
He's broken his nose!
No, he hasn't. He's fucking killed him.
Strasser rose, uncoiling himself from the sofa, going to peer out the window. Both he and Jack had heard the raucous cheering fall into an instant shocked silence. Strasser couldn't see past the gawking crowd.
I hear the sound of death. I do fear that Trooper Rourke has proven better than I thought. Orion Calder has proven too old and slow.
Jack's heart missed a beat, and it seemed as though someone had sucked the air from the room.
Trooper, I had best go and view the remains of my old friend. We can talk later, and by then your ribs might be better. I hope, my white-haired young man, for your sake, that you are well enough for what I have in mind.
As the door closed, Jack picked up the pitcher of water and poured himself a drink, finding that his hand was trembling. Court Strasser was coldly furious at the ease with which Ryan had butchered his tame bully. McLaughlin winced under the withering attack from his commanding officer, stammering and shuffling his feet, trying to explain that he'd warned Ryan not to chill the trooper. But it had all happened too quickly for him to be able to do anything. The general ordered Ryan to be stripped and then chained, standing, in the farther of the two sex cells. McLaughlin wiped the sweat off his forehead once Ryan was chained up.
Oh, you've done yourself no, me bucko. And you nearly fucking did the same for me, sure you did.
I don't fight for fun. Man wants to take me on, then I'll try and chill him. That kind of grease had it coming.
McLaughlin left him, having obeyed the order from the general to make sure the fire in the brazier was burning brightly, and the various torture implements were glowing white hot. When Strasser came in, Ryan heard the command to lock the dungeon from the outside. The general wore his wig, strands of it sticking to the beads of perspiration on his forehead. He wore a long coat, loosely belted at the waist. As he strode up and down, Ryan could see that the sec boss was naked beneath it.
I won't mince words with you, Ryan Carter. Your backtalk costs nothing, but your actions have cost everything. Everything. I warned you what would happen if you crossed me. I was fucking triple-stooped to ever think you might work with me. Triple-stoop. But now, at least, I can partake of some pleasure.
Ryan had lived long enough to be sure that this wasn't the main course. Though he was securely chained to the adobe wall, he still had some degree of movement. And for some really serious punitive torture, you needed the victim to be very still. Ryan had seen some experts, had even suffered at their hands, and he had witnessed the amount of delicate skill that they all used. A needle or a scalpel in clumsy fingers can easily do either too little harm or too much. This was all for starters, to relieve Strasser's feelings and let Ryan know that there would be much, much more to come. Strasser didn't actually use any of the heated metal probes, pincers, and knives on his prisoner. He took them out of the brazier, holding them carefully by the rags wrapped around the handles, and he waved them close to Ryan's face, making sure he could safely flinch from the ruby glow. Strasser's parchment skin stretched in a narrow smile as one of the implements, curved like a corkscrew, neared Ryan's good eye, bringing sweat to the man's face.
Hot, isn't it, Ryan Carter? So hot that only an inch or so nearer and the radiation of the fire would sear out your vision. But I don't want that. Oh, no, not at all. I want you to see everything that goes on here, right to the last.
Strasser then contented himself with using his strong fingers, pinching and tweaking, leaving neat rows of swollen purple bruises across the tanned flesh, taking his pleasure from all the tender parts of Ryan's body. Beneath the arm and behind the elbows and knees, along the insides of the thighs and at the back of the ears. Ryan nearly passed out when the sec boss took each nipple between thumb and finger, squeezing hard, harder, leaving them throbbing with pain, surrounded by white puffed skin.
Now this, Ryan.
Strasser cupped Ryan's genitals in the palm of his right hand, tightening the pressure a little, grinning wolfishly as Ryan raised himself on the tips of his toes to try and avoid the inevitable suffering. The ultimate obscenity was Strasser's obvious and visible arousal at the pain he was causing.
Just the beginning, my dear friend. I have a new companion with the most dazzling snow-white hair and eyes like those glowing coals there. I think I shall go to him. Perhaps bring him to watch. Perhaps little Jackie might want to share the funning. Perhaps he... might.
Strasser gripped Ryan's genitals so ferociously that his prisoner slumped unconscious in the chains. By the time his darkness lifted, the sec door was firmly shut, and Ryan was alone. Christy started awake, eyes darting around the wiki-up, past the yellow lights of the small earthenware lamps. The blankets that separated the long room into sections hung motionless.
Oh, Kaya.
It had been like a fist, groping feverishly inside her head, plucking her awake, sweat trickling cold down her spine, her hair coiled tightly and protectively around her skull. It was Ryan. Ryan was in terrible trouble and needed help. Jack hadn't been able to get to him, which probably meant the boy was already dead.
Oh, Earth Mother, help me. Show me what we have to do. Should we go to the villain and attack it? Or is this the parting of the ways?